Hello, hello, good morning. In this episode, we talk to Jermaine Apong. Welcome to the Flutter 101 podcast, a weekly podcast focusing on Flutter and Dart. My name is Vince Varga, and welcome to the show. Jermaine Apong is a web developer, YouTuber, and blogger. Today, we focused on Dart outside of Flutter, Dart on the backend and on the web. Jermaine works on Creative Bracket. Creative Bracket is the go-to resource blog on Dart and Flutter with easy-to-understand written and video tutorials. He's got the greatest YouTube videos on Dart. He's got great videos on different Dart backend options, Aqueduct, Shelf Router, Angel, as well as Angular Dart, Firebase, AWS Amplify, Heroku, Cloud Functions, GraphQL, and of course, Flutter. Welcome, Jermaine.
Thank you, Vince. Thanks for having me.
Before we get started, could you please introduce yourself? Maybe what do you do? How did you get into software development? And how did you hear about Flutter and Dart?
Yeah, sure. So currently, I am a web developer. I'm contracting right now, doing some front-end, predominantly Angular right now. But then it's a mix of other languages like PHP, which I've done in the past. I also, of course, do Dart development. Initially, as like a personal project that I ended up creating tutorials for. But then recently, I've got a client Flutter project that I'm also working on, that I guess we'll talk a little bit about later on. In terms of my development, software development history, so this goes back to 2006. So summer of 2006, around that time, I believe. So a couple of friends of mine had joined this sort of community project, or like an initiative by the local council to teach them web design. But what happened rather was that they were given a brief for a website, and then they were just told to, you know, just go make it happen. During that time, I was, for the most part, a graphic designer. So that's my background. I don't have a computer science background or anything like that. Mostly been doing graphic design during that time. So they came to me for help. I used software that was available during that time. Thinking around that time, there was a lot of, WYSIWYG type editors during that time. So, you know, if you've heard of Dreamweaver, that kind of software was quite big. I wasn't using Dreamweaver, it was another one. I forget the name. I used that software. I tried my best to put something together. We got a website live, but then it was the frustration I experienced while using those software, because it gets to a, you do encounter scenarios where you want the software to align an element properly, but then it doesn't, and it requires you needing to jump into the markup and making changes from there. But I didn't know HTML during that time, so it was just that frustration trying to figure things out, doing like some Googling, which eventually, after the end of that project, that drove me to head into the local library to get a book, which it's called Sam's Teach Yourself HTML in 24 Hours. So that's how I my web development journey started. And so I did a couple of like practice projects during that time, some freelancing for various small businesses. And also eventually picked up a backend language like PHP. Because during that time as well, I found out that my cousin also did web development. He still does development right now, but he was mostly into PHP. So he mentored me for quite a bit During that time, also I came across WordPress as a CMS, so I did some WordPress development. I had a WordPress blog during that time, written in WordPress, did a WordPress site for my friend. And it was in 2010, I believe, I got my first official job after I graduated in uni. It was a graphic design degree. And over the years, I also got into JavaScript a lot more because in the early days, I found it quite difficult understanding, getting to grips with JavaScript as a language, and then some of the quirks surrounding the language, trying to navigate through there. So I'd not touched JavaScript for a while, or I tried my best not to touch JavaScript too much because it was just too confusing. But as time went on, around 2012, I decided to dive into JavaScript a bit more, improve my skills in that area. 2013, I believe, was when Dart, well, was when I heard of Dart. It was in 2013, and during that time also I was having some frustrations with JavaScript itself, so I dived into Dart at that time, and I really enjoyed working with it, especially the static typing that came with it.
Yes.
And yeah, go on.
And how did Dart look like back then? Because you mentioned you heard about Dart in 2013, so I assume it was quite different.
There was, I think one of the differences was around the static typing, because during that time it was initially optional, as opposed to right now in Dart 2, where it is, you get static typing by default. So during that time it was a bit optional. So you could specify that a variable is of type string, but secretly behind the scenes it was sort of like dynamic, which was a bit strange. But I think part of the reasoning behind it was to encourage more JavaScript developers to get on board, because not many JavaScript devs were familiar with static typing, because JavaScript is pretty much dynamic. Isn't it?
Okay. And was already TypeScript around, or so? I think TypeScript was also around at that time, right?
Yes, TypeScript was definitely around. I think it was also, it was definitely early days for TypeScript as well. So you will, I think there was this video where the Dart, was it the developer, the tech lead for the Dart language, I believe, and the lead also for the TypeScript project got together, and they were discussing the differences. But I mean, Dart did come out of the, Dart was birthed because of the frustrations that the V8 team had when working on JavaScript for the Chrome V8 engine. So it was out of those frustrations, that's what led them to take a different path and create, a new language from scratch. But from what I gather with TypeScript, rather than creating a new language, they decided to add a layer on top of, this dynamic JavaScript language, and then introducing types to JavaScript itself, right?
And so, what made you start creating content focusing on Dart? Because, in my opinion, your content is pretty unique because you have so many great videos about basically all like Angular Dart, Dart on the back end. So, what made you start creating content focusing on these technologies?
Yeah, so what drove me to it was, although I sort of got into Dart from 2013, there was a period that I didn't go back to the language at all, because JavaScript also was, I think that was also around the time, not long afterwards, ES6 came out, and it had some of the, it was quite attractive back then. And of course there was a buzz surrounding it as well. So because of that, I had left Dart on the side for a bit. Also, it didn't sound like the Dart team was promoting it that much. So I wasn't sure what the future looked like for it. So I'd left it for a couple of years till 2017. Yeah, I think it was in 2017 where I experienced a job. I think the term is called JavaScript fatigue, whereby the constant influx of, you know, frameworks and libraries for JavaScript and like tutorials on what the disk keyword is. Like everything just looked too familiar. I got bored. I think that's the best way of putting it. I got bored with it, and that kind of made me decide to turn back to take another look at the Dart ecosystem to see what was happening. And lo and behold, I came across Eric Seidel's presentation on what was called the Sky framework at that time. Later on became Flutter. And I remember after watching that video, I just said to myself that, you know what, this is going to blow up. Like, I remember saying to myself that, you know what, it will be worth taking another look at Dart and seeing where it's got to now. And of course, doing that, I got to see that the language has, you know, improved a bit as well. Also, the, what do you call it, the static typing was much more strict. Rather than loose, so on and so forth. And so in 2018, I wanted to also get back into blogging and creating content for developers. But then the JavaScript ecosystem was so saturated, so it was difficult for me to figure out a unique way to doing that. Like, I was wanting to make sure that what the content I was producing was already out there, but then because it's so saturated, it was just difficult for me to figure that out. So I decided that I'll write some content for Dart, and the approach that I took was to look at the tutorials, the tutorials that you would find with JavaScript and also specifically Node.js as well, and rewrite that in Dart, if that makes sense. So if you sort of look up Node.js tutorials nowadays, you know, it's, you know, how to create a HTTP server, how to interact with the database, or with JavaScript is, you know, how to write a to-do app and those kind of things. So I just took that as my template and just demonstrated to people how to do all of that within the Dart language. Right, and as a result of that, it helped with content ideas from that time till now. And of course, as time went on, and getting feedback from the community, I decided to challenge myself by creating more, complicated like tutorials, like how to use, you know, Dart build runner, how to work with Shelf and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, where can we use the Dart language outside of Flutter? Because, so this is a Flutter podcast. I like using Flutter, but I think also like Dart's potential on other platforms is very interesting. So where else can we use Dart?
Yeah. So, I mean, Dart as a language comes with a virtual machine as well. So essentially wherever you can install the virtual machine, you should be able to run Dart code. The Dart SDK also comes with a bunch of classes, helper classes, and so on and so forth for performing various tasks. So you can write your own HTTP service. For instance, with Dart, you got, you know, WebSocket support. You can communicate with databases and whatnot. So pretty much anywhere the Dart VM can be installed, you can run Dart code. But then also, Dart code can also be compiled as a native executable, which can be run across pretty much all platforms. But I think outside of Flutter, you mostly be writing sort of server-side code with Dart, like, you know, like running like simple microservices, for instance, or you could be writing sort of system scripts, and that would, you know, process files and, you know, do whatever you need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And could you give a couple of examples to backend frameworks that the listeners should check out?
Yeah. If you had asked me this question a couple of months ago, I would have probably mentioned Aqueduct and Angel. But I think now what it looks like is Shelf and Shelf Router libraries are a good starting point for anyone looking to get into backend development, writing servers and stuff like that. There are also a couple of community initiatives, such as the Marathon project, which I think the idea with that is to extend what Shelf and Shelf Router offers by attaching extra functionality like authentication, called cross-origin resource sharing support, and so on and so forth. But the project is still in its infancy. I did come across another backend framework called Alfred, which I think is pretty recent. I think you shared a tweet on this as well. And also the Alfred project is quite similar to Express, same as Shelf and Shelf Router. So anyone that has done Express.js development or Restify should find this, you know, quite easy to get started with.
And you mentioned Shelf and Shelf router. What's the difference between the two? So how do I need to see these libraries as?
Yeah, so Shelf would be sort of the base package. So Shelf Router is written on top of Shelf. And the idea of Shelf Router is to provide like a routing structure, which is similar to Express. So, you know, with Express, you create an Express object, and then in that object, you can invoke your get and post and put and so on and so forth, which are like helper. Functions, which behind the scenes will set the appropriate method and join the relevant route to it. So Shelf Router essentially does that. But then Shelf is much more, I forget what the word is, but essentially with Shelf, you get to define like middleware functions as well as pipelines and those kind of things. So it's a I guess it's a bit, yeah, it's a bit more bare bones. I would
Okay.
say Shelf is a bit more bare bones. So to use Shelf directly itself would sort of involve like writing a bit more, I guess, logic to piece things together. But then Shelf Router, at least on top, provides like an easier way of defining routes for it.
Okay. So if, for example, if I have today 1 hour to learn about backend Dart, you would recommend Shelf and Shelf Router to get started at least, right?
Yeah, I recommend those. I would say those are being actively worked on. Recently, I saw that it's been migrated to null safety as well. So it'll be very good to get started with. But also another reason that I'm recommending Shelf is that it's also the library, the package of choice that the Dart team have been using currently to enable running cloud functions on their Google Cloud platform. So recently they've been implementing Dart support for it, and the package that they're using is based on Shelf. So essentially, when you're running your cloud functions, you're running a Shelf server
Okay.
effectively. I've actually did a tutorial on this on my YouTube channel as well, so it's available for whoever wants to watch it.
Okay, we will link it in the episode description. And you mentioned also Aqueduct and Angel, and I believe those are, I don't know, discontinued. I don't know how official that is, but basically they are not very active at the moment. I think in Aqueduct's case, it was announced that it was basically discontinued. I don't remember which word or verb they exactly used. And also the Angel framework was also pretty much discontinued. Would you still use these? Because so I worked with those, but it was like, I don't know, like in 2019. Like end of 2019, and they were very good, and they were also a bit, I think, more like batteries included frameworks, and it was I think much easier to use than Shelf Router, but they are discontinued. So would you still use it or not really?
Oh no. Definitely. No, I wouldn't use it. Because yeah, I mean, because since it's been deprecated, that means it's not gonna receive any more maintenance updates. I think some people have discussed sort of picking it up and continuing from there, but I think at this moment it's a safer bet to go with Shelf and Shelf Router. Apologies for the sirens in the background if you can hear
Yeah, no worries.
what else can I say on it? Yeah, so I mean, in answer to your question, yeah, probably not. I would go with Shelf and Shelf Router because that is what is being actively maintained right now. I mean, I am keeping an eye on the Alfred project to see where it goes. There is another server-side solution called Jaguar,
Yeah.
but then I haven't heard much on it, so I can't speak much on that because I don't know where it is now.
Okay.
But
I think I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that is also discontinued. So,
okay, probably. Yeah, I think there is a lesson I think to like there yeah there's a lesson like from this, and I think it's to do with like these solutions require they do require community participation in order for it to succeed, because I find that like with open source the danger is that people, like, if you start an open source initiative, I think one of the initial things to do in the beginning is to, like, get as many contributors on board sooner rather than later. Because I think what happened with the Angel project was, of course, the author worked on it quite well, was delivering features, but I mean, eventually it does, the more people that use your solution, the more requests you're going to get, the more bugs you're going to have to fix. And also, when it gets to a point that the project grows that big, then it's, I guess people are more reluctant to contribute to it, sort of like the bigger it gets. But I think if an effort is made to get contributors while the project is in its infancy, then it works out better, because most people are joining in at the beginning and they are able to, you know, have more of a say in how the project should grow. So I think I really applaud the effort from Aqueduct and especially Angel. Those are quite good frameworks, but I do understand why, you know, the Angel project had to close down, because it's just a project of that size. A project of that size is just too much for one person to maintain. So I think for the Dart community, what we can do is to endeavor to contribute to these projects when they come out. So putting out like a list of requirements, but also at least putting across some code changes as well, or raising pull requests and that sort of thing. I think we need to put a bit more effort in doing that, or else we'll just keep having this problem. But then I don't think this is only with Dart. I think it's just open source projects in general. If it's just one person maintaining it, eventually it's just going to be overwhelming.
Yeah. And do you think a more modular approach would help, or would that just create a different problem that... So, for example, I could imagine the Dart backend ecosystem go in a direction that, okay, we don't want big frameworks because we are afraid that people will not be able to support it. And instead they write Alfred, which is, I think, it's a quite a small, library. Then I could add an ORM. I could... add some database layer, add some other small, I could try to build it on my own from different smaller modules. And if one of those modules basically will be deprecated, then I wouldn't have such a big issue, because then I only need to replace one small module. And I wanted to ask your thoughts about that. So would that just create a different problem that no one would know which are the right modules to glue together?
I guess it depends on how it's architected, but I mean, that's part of the reason why I recommend the, shelf and shelf router solutions, because it's done in a way that it's easy to extend, using the modular approach. I think it's what solutions like Express have done quite well.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that is they do allow you to extend it in a modular fashion. So from Express, there is this other project, called Passport JS, which it's a lot of these utility functions around authentication, helper functions around authentication. And there are just hundreds of them, because there are, all these individual sort of modules that the community have contributed. But then it all just integrates within Express. So if, let's say, one module was to be deprecated, you could, easily replace it with another one. So I think, yeah, definitely, that would be the best approach to take, because it's, I think it's easier to maintain in the long run. And yeah, like you said, if one part deprecates, then it's easier to, lift and shift with, with other solutions.
Okay. Yeah, I think I will try to take a look at those. I also worked with JavaScript and TypeScript, and now that you mentioned Passport, I think we also used it, and it was really like seamless integration with Express, and it was just it was working very well. I wanted to ask about the front end, like web solutions as well. So I think you mentioned Angular Dart, and I also heard saw in one of your videos over React. And I wanted to ask, like, what's the landscape there on the front end web options?
Yeah, I think within the front end web, yeah, I think my view has probably changed like over time. Just looking, like just monitoring and seeing what is available. Because I think when it comes to the front end web, it's pretty much Flutter that is the go-to solution promoted by the Dart team. We did have Angular Dart, which was, yeah, sort of, Angular JS, but then in Dart, you'd be writing Dart instead of JavaScript, which like worked pretty well. I did really enjoy using it because I could still use like coding languages that I was familiar with, so I could still have HTML, CSS, and then the Dart code. But for me myself, it did work out pretty well for me. But then it looks like I don't think the Dart team have stopped working on it, but then I think they've made it available only for their internal customers. Well, actually, no, I shouldn't say they've made it available, but I think their customers, it's strictly like Google. I think I came across a post by yeah, I forgot who it was, but I think, yeah, what the wording was is that their main customer is Google, rather than the open source community, because I think not many people were working with Angular Dart itself, so they sort of switched their customers to be internal rather than external. So I mean, you can still use Angular Dart. They've made it available. It's not being blocked off or anything, but it's just that in terms of priorities, they are prioritizing Google, their internal Google project, rather than the external community. So I mean, they are still working on it, adding features. They do like a release now and again. I think it's got now safety as well, recently. But I think one of the challenges with that so far is it will be sort of difficult to find like documentation for things. But then I found that sometimes I could look at the Angular TypeScript docs, and then I'm able to translate what's in there to Angular Dart. But I mean, I think in terms of if I was to create a, let's say, a web project, I think there are sort of more options. I mean, there are naturally more options sort of within the, JavaScript space. I think in terms of like if you're thinking like in terms of a long-term goal, I think probably you're, better off like sticking with the JavaScript libraries that are out there. unless you want to use Flutter Web, which I think is for like a particular scenario. So if you want to build like a web app, then yeah, the team recommend using Flutter Web for that. But then if you're building like pages that are document centric, like a like a blog or something like that, then yeah, I think you're I would have said Angular Dart if it was like mainstream, but then you have it. I think you're better off using what the JavaScript community offers. There is also the Over React project, but then it's yeah also used by a company based in Russia, I believe, for their project management tool. So I mean, they sort of maintain it themselves, but then yeah, I don't know what the roadmap sort of looks like for that, so I can't say much on that.
Okay.
The Dart SDK itself also, I mean, contains like some classes for like working with the DOM and web APIs and stuff like that. But I think in terms of the like I'll say the web landscape is not like very strong at this present moment. It looks like Flutter Web will be essentially the way to go if building like experiences on the web or building a web app, I would say.
Okay. And so, as I asked about Aqueduct and Angel, I also want to ask about basically Angular Dart. So, would you start a new project with Angular Dart? If I mean, not for like a hobby project but for anything serious with, I don't know, a team of a couple of developers, or would you rather recommend those people to either use Flutter Web or any other JavaScript framework?
Yeah, I'll probably lean in towards the Flutter Web direction, or yeah, or any of the JavaScript frameworks that are out there, because of the like the reason, because of the reason I gave earlier that the Angular Dart team has decided to switch their customer base from the community outside to Google, like internal like Google projects. So because of that, I mean, if it wasn't that that happened, then yeah, I would have recommended, not having a problem using Angular Dart. But I think it makes sense so far to be leaning towards the Flutter Web direction because they are, promoting like Flutter Web pretty strongly. It looks like their bets are placed on that. And also, the JavaScript community has been, naturally just flourishing in terms of solutions for the browser web. So yeah, it makes sense for me to be leaning in that direction.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate your thoughts on this topic. I also wanted to ask just now that we talked about backend and frontend and really just focusing on the current state of, I don't know, Dart, I wanted to ask a bit more personal questions. So I wanted to ask whether blogging and YouTube help your career, and if yes, then in which ways?
Oh wow, that's an interesting question. Yeah, I think it helped, but I think for the most part it gives you exposure. I think that's like predominantly like how that helps. Gives you a bit of a bit of exposure, but also I mean you also get to help the community grow. Which was one of the reasons why I decided to take this on, to create, this Dart tutorials and stuff like that, because I did, imagine like, of course, people enjoying Flutter, but then I did Imagine people deciding to take time to look at the underlying language itself, which is the, you know, like I guess my USP, if you like, that I mostly produce dark content rather than Flutter. But I think it definitely comes down to exposure, because I mean people recognize your content, and I think it opens opportunities from there. I'm not sure there's like much else I could add to it, but I think that exposure is what opens up opportunities for various other things. But also, again, being able to support like the community and help it grow, I think that's the most fulfilling aspect of it.
Okay. And I also saw your channel update videos, and I wanted to ask, what are your plans for this year, and where do you want to take your channel?
Yeah, I think I'm still working that out. But I'd like to probably explore like more cloud solutions, like create more tutorials for cloud environments. So I've done Google Cloud Platform, I've done MongoDB Atlas, I did that with the Flutter mini course, and there are more solutions coming out. We've got AWS Lambda, which has got runtime support for that, so I'd love to do tutorials for that as well. I did Hasura series on that as well. So yeah, I'm hoping this year to explore more like cloud tutorials, probably do a bit more like Flutter tutorials as well, because I am at the moment, I think I'm lacking in the Flutter sort of tutorials, but then I think it aligns with the initial reason as to why I started the channel. So for this year, I definitely want to do more like in the cloud space.
Okay. Yeah. Then I want to thank you again for joining us. I really enjoyed this episode. I think I learned a lot from it. And before we wrap things up, could you tell our listeners where they can find you online?
Yeah, sure. So I'm usually on on YouTube and Twitter quite a lot. So Twitter, Creative Bracket. So it's CREATIV_BRACKET. So you can follow me there. I post updates to do the YouTube channel there as well. And then on YouTube, I'm just CreativeBracket, youtube.com/C/CreativeBracket. I do have a website, CreativeBracket.com. You can visit that as well if you want. But I'm mostly active on YouTube and Twitter.
Okay, thank you. Then I think, and is there anything you want to add?
Not really, I think, yeah, just that.
Okay, thank you. Then thank you again for joining, and have a good day.
Bye. Yeah, thank you for having me. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please do me a favor and recommend the episode to your friends. Both online and in-person recommendations are appreciated, so share either on social platforms such as Twitter and LinkedIn, or just mention the podcast to your coworkers and software developer friends. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so that you don't miss the next episode. The podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and many others. You can also listen to the podcast directly from your web browser on flutter101.dev, that is flutter101.dev. You will also find an RSS feed there. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review. It only takes a couple of seconds and can help the podcast reach a bigger audience. Have a great day and see you next time.